Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Plants and Policies podcast. My name is Ina Tonchescu.
And I am Maddie Youngben.
Today, we are going to be talking about the impact the food system has on biodiversity. How does what we eat affect biodiversity? Isn't biodiversity all about preserving national parks and oceans from plastics and other pollutants? Let's start with the basics. What is exactly biodiversity and why is it important? Biodiversity, short for biological diversity, is the variety of all living things and their interactions. It often involves species richness and diversities of living things in an ecosystem. Everyone does their part to provide for the maintenance and health of the ecosystem or habitat. Biodiversity can also be defined as the maintenance of essential ecosystems, including the plants, animals, and water systems, and as well as the preservation of the balance and diversity within these systems. This is good not only for the animals and plants that live in specific ecosystems and habitats, but also for the health and well-being of humans and the planet as a whole.
That's a good place to start. So we can also start from the government of Canada, where they sort of talk about the question of why biodiversity is so important. So I'm going to read an excerpt from the government of Canada. "We all want to continue living in a country where we can watch birds, walk in nature, swim in lakes and rivers, and do all the activities that take us outdoors while enjoying fresh air and clean water. The diversity of life is essential for us to enjoy these simple pleasures. Examples of nature at work can be found everywhere. The process by which plants filter carbon dioxide and produce oxygen for us to breathe, the naturally occurring filtering of drinking water, the species responsible for enriching the soil in which we grow food, the pollination of plants that enables new seeds to grow, and the roles of oceans in the regulating of our climate. So biodiversity is vital to maintaining life on Earth and to ensuring clean, safe, sustainable environments. Habitat loss, the spread of non-invasive species, climate change, which we talk about a lot, pollution and overconsumption all contribute to the decline in the variety of living species and threaten nature as we know it. It is a good thing that Canadians and other people around the world are recognizing the issues and are taking action."
What a beautiful way to highlight the importance of preserving biodiversity. It often makes me wonder, though, if we know all of this and appreciate all of it, why are we still contributing to its destruction? Because when we think of the food system in relation to biodiversity, we're mainly talking about the destruction of it within ecosystems, especially due to what we're producing and how.
Yeah, and I sort of wonder the same thing. So we did some research here. So there's a lot of information going to be coming at you right now. So be prepared. Ooh, okay.
We're ready.
Don't leave. It's just good information.
Okay? I'm ready. I'm not leaving, at least.
don't space out. Okay. This is really good information. You can pull it out of your back pocket if you need to tell somebody that this is important. Okay.
Love it.
So I'm going to be pulling from York Food Policy for Canada on biodiversity loss. This will be linked in our description or wherever else we will cite the sources. So they have a lot of studies that they're citing from. These studies, and one of them in particular, claims that it is widely believed among ecologists that humans have triggered what is now in the early stages of the sixth mass extinction event. That's a tongue twister. And much of this is related to landscape simplification. So with that, another study claims that it is estimated that 11% of the Earth's land is used for crops and another 30% grazed by animals. Out of that 11% of crop growth, we know that most of it is used for feed crops for animals. Another study, Newbolt and Co., claims in 2015, agriculture is a major force of biodiversity decline across all classifications of organisms. Loken and Co. in 2020 claims that agriculture is a major force globally contributing to the surpassing of planetary boundaries, which we talk about a lot on in the research and hopefully continuing on this podcast. Looking at activities from within agriculture in regards to the impacts to Canadian biodiversity, McRae and Co. wrote the following in the year 2000 about the destruction of native habitat when it is cleared from farmland. As an example, they claim approximately 93% of prairie ecozones are in agriculture and only 1% of tall grass prairie. 19% of mixed grass prairie and 16% of aspen parkland remain. And this was in 2000. Imagine what it's like now, 24 mm-hmm. years later. Also, this is the last main point from this website and studies. The Breeding Bird Survey by Downs and Collins in 2003 mentions that the conservation of the prairies from the conversion of the prairies from native grasslands to farmland has impacted over half of the bird species in those areas. The destruction of the habitats adjacent or next to farm fields are also greatly affected, since habitat loss and habitat fragmentation are destroying the homes of the wildlife that live there.
Yeah, the evidence has been around for so long. It is disappointing to see how slow we've been to react, even globally. But right here in Canada, I see these studies are from 2000, 2003, 2015. And obviously, there's so many more studies that come out. 2023, 2024, we have studies. We're submitting preliminary reports to journals as we're speaking. There's an interesting journal that's available in Nature. It's called Options for Keeping the Food System Within Environmental Limits. This is from Springman and Co. 2018. Direct excerpt from there, and I'm going to read this out. We estimate that compared with the baseline projection for 2050, dietary changes towards healthier diets could reduce GHG emissions and other environmental impacts by 29% and 5 to 9% respectively. So 29% less GHG emissions, 5 to 9% other environmental impact respectively. For the dietary guideline scenario, would reduce by 56% GHG emissions and 6 to 22% in terms of other environmental impacts for the more plant-based diet scenario. And so it's quite interesting to see the difference of the dietary guideline and also the more plant-based diet guideline. Of course, there's still quite a big difference, but still quite an impact if you're looking at 29% less GHG emissions by simply following the dietary guidelines. Now, if you follow us on social media, you'll notice we often post research and interpret it in a way that anyone from the public can understand. We essentially get rid of the academic jargon and filter it all down for everyone. And this is huge, huge thanks to Maddie. We'll often find articles and we'll send it to Maddie and we'll say, "We don't understand us, please help." Or the other way would be Maddie finding important research and saying, "I found this research. It's very important for everyone to know about it." And then Maddie will go on and interpret it for us to actually be able to put it on social media. Now, of course, we have graphic designer Natasha who will actually make it pretty so it's easier to understand even more. And then I'll go in and write the captions. That's usually how you'll see us on socials. I'll
give you an example.
Very behind the scenes, right? It's the BTS of the hard work that our team actually puts in because it does take a lot, Maddie. Like we were kind of laughing before starting to record this podcast. We were saying that we're going to do some bloopers, but bloopers, that's the word, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not just about the bloopers. It's also like, I don't know if anyone will understand how much work we're putting together to bring a podcast like this, right? We are taking research and we are putting it on social media. We're putting it in a podcast format. We're going on YouTube. We're going on a newsletter. We're trying to essentially fill the voids of Canadian, very, very specifically Canadian research, or research that doesn't just cover the world or America, for example. We really want to be seeing more specific research to Canada. And Maddie has been able to bring that to us on a much larger level than we've ever been able to do. And so here's an example that we wrote on social. And this is an example of us doing a meta-analysis from Filazola and Co. in 2020. This meta-analysis this study was called The Effects of Livestock Grazing on Biodiversity, our multi-trophic meta-analysis. And here's what we wrote on social media. There are 109 studies all pointing to the fact that when animals, specifically those regarded as livestock, are grazing, there could be massive global impacts on the other trophic levels, especially herbivores and pollinators. Put simply, livestock grazing shows a direct negative impact on other animals that feed on plants and pollinators. Once the grazing livestock was removed, even years later, there was proof of abundance and diversity in these environments. The negative effects of animal agriculture can be felt by all, but especially marginalized individuals. It is these individuals who will suffer from the increased food costs, loss of homes, from extreme climates, food scarcity, loss of crops, and more. 109 studies are more than enough to justify the Canadian government needing to subsidize more plant food growth and establish plant-based food policies and systems. Now, of course, if you like the sound of how we're interpreting the articles for you, even in this podcast and also on our social media, do let us know. And that way we'll know that we're on the right path to filling the gaps that we mentioned earlier.
Exactly. And I'm really excited and happy to continue to interpret these articles for everyone. You know, not everyone is able or has the time to sort of filter mm-hmm. through and look through all this dense information like weeds. So you just got to like go through and you got to like navigate your way, and not everyone has time for that. So if we can make it easy, why not? And you know, the more informed we are, the more likely we're able to drive strategic and effective changes, which mm-hmm. we all want.
Mm-hmm. Now, Maddie, let's get back to biodiversity. What can we do to combat biodiversity loss?
Well, so a key human need or value will be the respect and the appreciation of Indigenous knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it'll be absolutely essential to mitigating the damages done through our current land use and agricultural practices and overall just biodiversity loss. So biodiversity loss impacts local and small farmers, Indigenous communities, and others who depend on the land that they live on. Lack of pollinators and other trophic levels can directly affect farming success, which can lead to sort of things such as access, lack of access to food or crops because they won't be able to produce them. So what does success look like? We sort of put a bulleted list here, so I'm going to read them out. And there's definitely more to this list. This is not comprehensive at all, but I think that it's a good starting point for us to start looking at. So first, we need to shift focus to a more plant-based agricultural practice that is shown to emit less greenhouse gases and use and destroy less land, water, ecosystems, and habitats. Second, we need to focus on and initiate projects to rewild land and restore land currently used for animal-based agriculture to promote land back initiatives. Third, we need to conserve habitats, wildlife, and protecting animals and vulnerable people, all while supporting the health of Canadians and the planet or habitats that Canadians live on and live with. Lastly, and in my opinion, one of the most important things that we need to do is prioritize uplifting, listening to, and respecting Indigenous traditions and knowledges to combating the damages already done to the land that contribute to the threats to biodiversity.
Yeah, great point. Success can also be achieved through policy change. And influencing that change can start from the comfort of your own home. Today, believe it or not, is the day to begin taking action. We have a Raise the Bar campaign in support of the Canadian government's latest public education campaign surrounding changes people can make to save the environment. They focus heavily on the food guide, and we were so happy to see that. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that we saw the ads on TV and that they do not speak of the food guide. They don't actually mention that everything that you can make, you begin to make change is with what's on your plate. And so we definitely want to push the side of the food guide a lot more. We really want to show the Environment Canada, and it's the department that's actually running this is Environment and Climate Change Canada, which is obviously the government of Canada. We're going to ask Canadians to get together and start sharing as much as possible of with the graphics that we'll actually provide for everyone and unite across Canada. We're going to take the statistics of how many people engage, and then we're going to be reaching out to Environment and Climate Change Canada policymakers and the Minister Guilbeault and show them how important it was for them to run this campaign. And together we can show the government how happy we are to be seeing this narrative be presented to Canadians. All you need is a little bit of time, a social media presence, and to follow some of our guidance on how to share and make an impact. And all you have to do is go to responsiblefoodpolicy.ca to join in. Doesn't that sound exciting, Mads?
really exciting for that.
It is so exciting. We can totally make a difference. And if you know anything about CRFP and the amazing campaigns that we've run in the past, even last year, we ran sustainable agriculture strategy. We also ran a biodiversity campaign. We united like 41,000 Canadians or something like that. And I think like over 667 people took 3 hours to write responses and in accordance to the consultations that the Canadian government were asking for. So it's pretty impressive how many people can get together and how much difference we can actually make. Let's leave it at that for this week, folks. As always, you can reach out to us if you have any questions or requests for podcasts or guests. If you'd like to join in, email us at hello@responsiblefoodpolicy.ca. And we'll see you next week, same time, at the Plants and Policies podcast, now available on Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Addict, and so many more. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. Bye. See you soon.
Bye-bye.